Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a TTRPG podcast. Today I'm here with Soul. Hello.
Hello, hello.
We're talking about something real important that I think all of you need to hear, that I needed to hear multiple times and still need to hear, and that is knowing your self-worth and charging what you deserve, which I think is a hard topic for many of us.
Especially with freelancers, it's really a difficult conversation. I talk to a lot of people about it, so it's something that I'm very familiar with. And it's something that I have to tell myself a lot to charge what I'm worth. So this is going to be an exciting one.
We may have had this discussion in the past, offline, once at least. Yeah, so first, tell everybody about you and your what you do and stuff like that.
Sure. I go by Soul online, Soul's Roles. I do a lot of different things. I'm a TTRPG content creator. I'm a social media manager, a little bit of a community manager. I'm a writer. I'm a blogger. I'm also a health and wellness coach. My degree is in public health education. My training was in health education and promotion. Prior to that, I did personal training for about 10 years. So I'm used to working with people on one-to-one interventions, figuring out what the best way to improve their health is, and improve their wellness. One of the facets of wellness that we don't often talk about is financial wellness and community wellness. These are the two things that I'm particularly interested in. I've been in some pretty dire financial straits in the past. I was homeless for about a year, so I'm really familiar with trying to get established and kind of clawing back to solvency. So that's really something that a lot of people don't think about as an aspect of wellness, but it really is, and it's more than just managing debt and having a budget.
Yeah, and if you want to hire him, I will put the link down below.
I appreciate it.
Because it did wonders to at least tell me what I already needed to, like, I already knew it. I just needed someone else to tell me it.
See, that's really the trick of my job is 9 times out of 10, the people that I work with, they already know the answers. I always tell everyone, you know, there's only one expert on your health, and that's you. It's not going to be me. It's not going to be a doctor. It's not going to be anyone else. You already know what's going on better than anyone else does. So you just tell me where you want to go, and we'll work together to figure out what needs to happen. That's really a big part of it. So I'm not surprised you already knew it.
Yeah, it's that anxiety side of things. Mm-hmm. And I noticed, so now I'm looking for a full-time job. And when we discussed prior, it was about adding new work to my options of things that I can do. Mm-hmm. And consulting was one of them. And professional GMing was the other. And with professional GMing, I was charging like $15 a client per person per episode. And you pointed something out, which I didn't think about, which was, how much time are you talking to these people outside of the game? How much time do you prepare? Are you taking that into consideration for your cost? And it's like, nope, I'm not. Definitely not doing that. Because the talking part, like, I never see as work. So I don't, like, it didn't click. That, like, oh, hey, I may not need to prep because I very rarely prep for things. Mm-hmm. But I do spend a good 2 to 3 hours sometimes with these people a week talking about characters or character growth or things like that. So I was like, yeah, I guess that should count.
It absolutely should. Any time that you spend on it should definitely count.
And then with the consulting, I was just having such a hard time wrapping my mind around the number, mm-hmm. because the most I ever made was $25 an hour in a company I worked for 13 years. So it's like in my brain, and when you're built, a lot of us have been raised in the whole, like, work your way up from the bottom mindset, right, which is such a hard fucking mentality to break. So it's like, well, I worked my ass off to get to $25. How dare I ask for $75 an hour? Like, I clearly need to work 13 times 3 years to make this happen.
No, not at all.
Which is just a ridiculous mindset to have. And then now with looking at project management jobs, some of the starting salaries are ridiculous. Even if I, like, once I get a certification that I want to get, like, project managers can start in like 6 figures. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how? I've been doing it for free practically, basically, because I've been doing it for like friends and stuff, mm-hmm. or my own shit.
Well, yeah, that's something that I think a lot of people don't really, just to sidetrack just a little bit, when it comes to what we're doing in the TTRPG space as freelancers, most of us are single person operations. And that means you develop an immense amount of skills, not just in writing, not just in editing, not just in copywriting, not in layout, not in format. not just in marketing, but the one skill that you're always developing is project management. Because that's what project management is about. It's about taking all of those pieces together, finding a timeline that works, and making sure things actually get done.
Yeah, and if you're on a podcast or a stream definitely, because I've been a project manager now for 6 to 9 months. I don't remember the exact week month I started for Weave the Tale, and that's 4 to 5 different shows every season, plus one shots, plus dealing with the background stuff and like setting it all up and making sure everybody does what they need on a weekly basis and people will show up and then they get paid. And like, there's just so many steps that even if you're not dealing with, like, I'm not the one making the overlays, I'm not the one doing the social media, like, you have to remind and stay on top of, like, hey, is this done?
Right.
And the times that I didn't do that, it fell through the cracks.
Oh, no.
And it's like, because I was like, oh, you have this because this is your project. That's evidently not the right choice. And then I'm like, what do you mean it's not being done today? I don't understand. Like, this is the day it's supposed to be done. You don't have a cast yet for it? I don't understand.
Oh, no.
Like,
no,
I do no, not no. understand at all. So it's been interesting doing it for a larger group versus with my own podcast where I'm solely in charge of it. And occasionally, like, I realize, oh shit, I haven't reached out to people in a while, and I'll like go book the next like 3 months, which is why like I reached out so far in advance when we set this up. But whenever I meet new people or meet someone that does something interesting or like makes a change in the TTRPG community for the better, we're just fun people to talk to. I'm like, you want to be on the show? Like, we could have a very interesting conversation with my ADHD riddled brain for an hour. But yeah, I think that's the hardest part, is like breaking that mindset. And then also, I think the other big thing that I had an issue was with combining things. So like, the one I think that I was stuck on, if I remember correctly, was I've done developmental writing technically, or technical writing technically, for like 9 years at my company, but it wasn't under that terminology. So when I was like, I want to do this for tabletop games, I was like, no, but I don't have experience in tabletop games doing this thing. And that doesn't matter to some companies. Some companies, they specifically want you to have specific experience, but I think what you specifically said was like, you've been doing this for how long? 9 years. You've been a DM for how long? You've been a player for how long? Why don't you think?
Yeah. What do you think that the skills you developed in one of these areas has not cross-pollinated with the other? Like, when you write, if you are a technical writer, a developmental writer, and you're writing your own TTRPG stuff, do you think that that won't be influenced by that skill? It absolutely will.
Right. Yeah. And that's completely fair when you look at it from a different perspective. But at the time, it's just like, no, they cannot combine. They do not combine at all. What are you talking about? Like, and hobby and work. How dare you combine me? And it makes sense. So what do you think is the first step for people to understand what they should be charging, no matter like what kind of job it is? Well, it's like freelance, I guess.
Well, freelancing is particularly tricky because we have to do our own taxes, we have to cover our own insurance. You know, there's a lot of different things in there. And I know a lot of people are thinking about, well, you know, I've got a full-time job right now, I don't need to do that. You should still charge as if you do. Find out what it's going to take for you to survive. And not just survive, like, you know, I can go live in a tent. That's surviving. But that's not really what I'm talking about here. And make sure that you set yourself a living wage, a wage that will allow you to take care of your base needs, but also take care of all of your other needs that are out there. You know, food and shelter are great. Yeah, we need those, absolutely. But you also aren't going to get anywhere long term if you aren't taking care of all of your other needs, your social needs, your healthcare needs, your future needs. You know, charge for retirement. You're not going to work forever, so make sure that your rates include that plan. You're going to come up with a really large number. It's going to be a lot bigger than you expect, especially as a freelancer, because you are taking care of a lot of things that are packaged into your compensation in a company. You know, for an employee, you can generally figure it's like double your payroll is what your total cost is to a company after all of the accessories and other things are done. So if you're looking at a number that is really shocking to you, understand that that's probably your worth. And if it's more than you're getting paid right now, that isn't because your math is wrong. That's because we live in a society that optimizes, you know, getting the most out of people and giving them the least. So most of us are underpaid. I would say the vast majority of people that are going to listen to this are probably underpaid. But as a freelancer, like I said, you figure out something that's going to be enough money for you to do this full-time on your own, taking care of your own taxes, etc. Even if you have a full-time job right now, you should still be charging that higher rate as if it were your only source of income. Because if you lowball it, if you undersell it, then you are not going to be doing yourself or any of your other freelancers a favor. It's a race to the bottom. And if we continuously do that, where we're charging based on having, you know, a steady income from a second job, then the floor becomes zero. You know, we're all going to be racing towards that because, oh, you know, I've got a job that pays $70,000 a year. I don't need any money from freelancing, so I'm not going to charge anything to write.
Right.
That's not good because you are undervaluing your work. You're making it more difficult for yourself to move into doing that full time as something that you would passionately pursue rather than, you know, a side gig that, you know, allows you to bear through doing whatever work gets you that $70,000 a year or whatever. And also it means you're sabotaging other freelancers. So set your rates high. Set them pretty high. You're also going to find that when you set your rates higher, you attract different clients.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a perception of luxury service that exists. If you price something high, then certain people are going to be attracted to that because they see it as a luxury service, or they're like, oh, wow, you know, this guy's charging $125 an hour for just a quick 30-minute consult. He's got to be amazing. You know, he's got to actually know what's going on here. And
clearly he knows what he's doing.
Right. No one would charge that if they didn't. So you get clients that way. You do cut out some people that may not have the financial means to hire you elsewise. So you're going to run into things where there's socioeconomic stratification, ethnic, cultural problems there, barriers to the global south. Those are all things to kind of factor in ethically. But at the end of the day, you need to figure out what's going to be your rate to do your job. If you want to cut that rate for other people, if you want to make exceptions, if you want to donate your time, fantastic, great, I encourage that. But what it comes back to is budgeting that initial number, that first one of, okay, how much is it going to be that I charge just on its face?
Yeah.
And also, if you are doing those donations of time and effort and energy, bake that into your other costs. The people that can afford your services can also subsidize the people that can't. So, you know, if you're looking at it like I'm charging $10 an hour for someone that's in, say, the Philippines, because that's a lot of money in the Philippines. Whereas, you know, I'm charging like $50 to someone in the States, maybe bring your States one up a little bit so that you're more on parity. Because if you work for both of them equally, you're going to be well below your desired threshold. So factor in your donated hours as well. Those count.
Yeah, that's fair. I know that, like, I've given discounts to friends,
mm-hmm.
people who I've worked with before, or like I've done bartering for things before, which is a fantastic thing, but I never thought of being able to do. I remember, like, I had one client who I edited for Tales of Asperon, which is a fantastic podcast. And I believe they're coming back soon. So you should all check that out.
Awesome.
But I wanted a video done. I had music already that was created by someone.
Nice.
And I had pictures and I wanted to put it together in like a really cool way. And I knew that I could technically do it if I wanted to, but I also knew that he had years of experience and it would be so much better if it had his abilities put into it. And I was like, hey, how much would it cost if I wanted this like 2-minute thing done? And he told me the cost, and it was equivalent to about 6 hours of editing. And I was like, okay. He's like, well, we can barter if you want. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, because I had never thought about bartering before that.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, instead of paying me money, just give me a discount on my editing. And if you want to break it up, instead of just doing like the next couple episodes free, because then you still make something,
right?
We can like do like break up whatever, however you want. So if I want to do 50% off each time until we hit those 6 hours, then that mm-hmm. was what we ended up doing, I believe. And it ended up being exactly 6 hours because he guesstimated, but it was like exactly 6 hours of work by the end of the day. And it ended up working out. Like, I didn't do anything technically for free because I got a beautiful
right
video out of it, which I still love. And I didn't have to, and it didn't make sense either to like say, well, here's money, and then you give me back money.
Right.
So it saved the cash transference, I guess.
Right.
All the extra fees with that, but it was really nice to do that. And I think I've only done it with the one person. I can't recall doing that with somebody else as of the moment. And I remember the first client. So I have a $75 podcast consultation fee, and I haven't gotten any consulting offers.
Oh, no.
But I did get someone reached out to me about something else, and they were wanting to pay me for a consultant. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I would love to do it like an hour or so, and then we can discuss how I can make my audio quality better. And I was like, okay. And I listened to the audio quality, and it was a tutorial video, which is something I personally am really good at and I enjoy doing. So I was like, well, it's just as an option, I can help you do this. Or if you wanted, I could make it for you. Because one of the things I am proud of that I am capable of doing is taking something, learning how to put it in a way that people can understand it from multiple perspectives, because training isn't just one way.
Right.
You need visual, audio, and explanations and everything like that. Hands-on experience as well. So if they work with me as I'm doing things. So I've taught myself from working in a corporation and training people how to do that in a way that people would get the least amount of confused. And it was like simple things as small as like, click the Windows button, go to this specific folder. Like if you just say, open my documents, someone's going to get lost.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what do you mean open my documents? I don't see my documents. Where is my documents? It's like, okay, well, click this, type this, do this. And you have to put all those in between steps.
It's like the old adage of how do you make a peanut butter sandwich?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's such a funny. There's a video of that.
Someone trying to do it. Yeah.
He follows his kid's instructions to the T. And it's so fucking funny.
Does not work out well.
So funny. He's like, spread the peanut butter, spreads peanut butter jar. But yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like someone isn't going to have the knowledge and skill set that you already have. You're taking for granted that they are at an equal playing field that you are in, which is when I learned those things or learned how to do a new project, I always wanted to do it myself instead of watching.
Right.
It's like, walk me through it and I will take notes as I'm going, because if they say, oh, and then you go here. Like, where's here? How do I get there? How did we jump to that step? If I watch them, I'm like, what the heck did you just click on? Like, whoa. You clicked something on your keyboard right there? Like, what was that? Mm-hmm. What shortcut did you just do?
So that's kind of similar to my work as well. You know, being in health education and promotion, being a one-to-one trainer, the big thing that I tell people kind of jokingly is I work, most of my job is being an interpreter for doctors. Because you'll go to the doctor, right? And they'll tell you something that you've heard 100,000 times before. Hey, lose weight. Great. That didn't help my problem any, but let's just humor you for now. So you go, okay, well, how do I lose weight? And everyone's like, oh, you just eat less and you exercise more. Okay, but how do I do that? And that's the part where people kind of freeze. They're like, what do you mean? How do I do that? I just do that. I'm like, okay, well, how do you just do that? Like, I'll just eat less. I just won't have a candy bar. Okay. When do you normally have candy bars? I don't know. Okay, well, how are you going to not eat candy bars if you don't know when you're having them, man?
Yep.
Like, where is this step coming from? What do we do to address that? I'll just lose weight. Cool. I'll just become rich. Like, that doesn't work, man. Like, I'll just go make more money.
Yeah, I wish it was that easy.
No.
So, like, no, just give me more money. No, just give it to me.
Yeah. So being the type of person that you explore those steps, you find those differences. It's a different mindset. It really is. Because most people, like you said, they don't have the experience you do. And most people trying to teach, they just jump right to the end results.
Yeah. I've run into that a lot because I have a lot of chronic health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to learn how to decipher doctorese. So I have psoriasis, which is a immune disorder where my immune system attacks my skin and my joints. And most people don't even realize that, even people with psoriasis, they like don't fully comprehend what they have. And there are so many people who got it because of an allergy to like food. Yep. So there are so many people who just preach about, oh, well, I cut out gluten and my psoriasis was cured. And I'm like, well, first off, there isn't a cure for psoriasis.
Yeah. Asymptomatic.
Yes. You could be asymptomatic. You can have clear skin, sure, but it is not cured. You will have this for the rest of eternity. Mm-hmm. There is not a cure at all. But that worked for you because gluten was your trigger for why your immune system acted up and why your psoriasis flared. That doesn't work for everybody because some people get it when they break their leg and then their leg is wounded, their immune system responds. Some people get it because they got sick, like pneumonia. I was born with it, so it's hereditary. So like I literally started having symptoms of it within like 6 months of being a baby or being born. And when someone told me, like, I literally had people tell me it was religious reasons too. And I'm like, what?
I'm not going to comment on that one. I'll get mad about it.
Yeah, I'm not going to go into details, but I'm just like, I'm sorry, what did you just say? I'm just going to walk away from this one. Yeah. We're not going to discuss that. But the worst one for me is always the food one. And I get so pissed. And it's like one of the, I don't get mad super easily, like to the point of wanting to be confrontational, because I'm a very non-confrontational person. I will get confrontational when people bring up food being a magical cure for things. Because I'm like, shut the fuck up. That's not how that works. Mm-hmm. Like, I've had people say if I go vegan, it'll magically be cured. I'm like, no, it won't, because it wasn't caused by meat. So I've literally have tried every single thing in current existence to help fix the problem, except for light therapy. That is the only thing I haven't tried. And the only one that works for me is the biologicals, which are the most expensive option.
Yeah.
Next to light therapy. And even with biologicals, they weren't made specifically for psoriasis. They were made for rheumatoid arthritis. So then you had to fight your insurance company to get coverage. And it wasn't until like the last 2 or 3 years that I was put on Skyrizi, which is specifically made for psoriasis and has been created to help with it. And it was the only thing in my entire life that actually got me full clear. Like, nothing. I had a clear scalp for the first time in 34 years. To the point that I cried because of it when I ran my fingers through my hair for the first time. I was like, what is this? What is happening? What is going on? But I know that it's not a cure because as soon as I went off that medication, it came back. So when I lost my health insurance because I quit my job, it came back with a fucking vengeance, by the way. It's like, ha, fuck you.
Yeah.
Super pain.
Rebounds, unfortunately.
Exactly. And then also, like, if you get used to not having the pain levels, like, you get accustomed to lower pain levels, you're like, oh, these feel so much worse now that I'm not used to it. What the fuck?
It's part of, I've got chronic pain from a couple of different things. I've got bad joints, and I was in martial arts for 20 years and lifting weights. So I'm pretty much constantly, left knee and left shoulder are in pain. And I try not to take any painkillers because of it for two reasons. One, being pain-free feels too good. That is going to be very easy for me to get addicted to.
Yes.
And two, when I'm not on painkillers, the pain is way worse. So I just kind of coast at this level of being constantly annoyed at my joints. It works out. But I think we've gotten a little off track on knowing your worth.
Probably. I mean, that's knowing your worth to the doctor.
It is, but actually. Yeah, I mean, we can definitely tie that in. But what you were talking about was getting back into project management and the skill set there.
ADHD brain. Yeah, getting back into project management. One of the biggest things with project management is you don't realize how many things you have to do until you write it all down.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And if you look at podcasting, for example, like I literally had to try to figure out how to tell someone who was going to help me what I needed help with. And I couldn't think of everything because I just do it. I just go through the motions. And it doesn't feel like it's supposed to be a lot because it's like, oh, you make a video, done. But you have to find the person you need to talk to. You need to schedule that, make sure they're okay with being recorded. Schedule that time to record. Find out what the topic is. Get them access to everything. Make sure they have everything they need to actually record. Actually record the episode, do backup audio, make sure that you have learned from your prior mistakes where things get fucked up and you have to completely redo the entire thing. Then you have to edit it. And that's whether you edit it or somebody else edits it. And that takes time or money. Then once it's edited, you have to add things like your intro and your outro. You have to add things like we have advertisements on ours. So I have advertisements on mine. Yeah. So you add those in, which you have to make those.
Oh, yeah.
So that's an extra step.
Unless you're extremely lucky and whoever's product you're advertising provides you with that, which doesn't happen really ever.
Right. I have some from like friends, but those are like freebie ones. But there's for the people who paid me to do advertisements, I had to make it and then get it approved. So that takes time. Then you have to make your cover art. If you're going to do cover art, I do clips. So once you export the audio, you have to find a clip or snippet from the episode so that you can do that on DaVinci Resolve. So I have to do that and then add the captions to that, which takes another 20-ish, 15 to 20 minutes. Then you have to actually schedule everything, write out your actual description and tag the right people and make sure everything that you need in there is in there. Mm-hmm. All your SEO jargon and schedule it. Then you have to do the Twitter schedule to announce all the episodes and schedule all those things with your audio that in the videos that you made. Mm-hmm. And you have to like remember to announce it to people once it's actually out and share it with everybody.
Make sure it's closed captioned. Make sure that your image has alt text. Make sure.
Oh, yep. God. I need to do the transcripts, but I have so many videos. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. There's so many additional steps. And then even once you're done, it's not technically done yet. Like, it's still there on your feed. So you might want to check analytics on it. You might want to repost about it. You might want to remember, like, oh, Mental Health Awareness Week is up. Go post this mental health episode you did because it's important to that week. And then you just rinse and repeat for every single show that you do. But then you should do that for other shows that you're on, for other projects you're working on.
Yeah, being a guest is always the tricky one. It's like, especially for me, with the amount of social media managing I do, like if I'm guesting on a show or if I'm guesting on a podcast, like how much social media campaign should I do? How much is going to be appropriate? Is it going to offend people if I roll out like a small marketing campaign for this? Yeah, what's it going to impact with people later on when I'm not guesting on this? Are they going to wonder why they're not seeing the show anymore? Like, hey, Sol, why don't you talk about that show anymore? I was only on for one episode.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like when there's a huge difference I've noticed when somebody else helps with marketing and not marketing. Mm-hmm. Like one of my best episodes was a one shot that the creator of the one shot Up River Down River, she did like a live listen to it. Oh, and she nice. Tweeted about it as she was listening to it after the edits were done, even though she was there for the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And that show got some of the best views versus even ones with like really popular people, like B. Dave Walters was on the show and he retweeted it, but that was all that it was, just a retweet and that was it. And then that's fine. That's what he had time to do, but that didn't get any more views than anything else on my show.
Right.
Even though I had a fancy popular person name on it, it still got the same amount of views as less known people.
Right. Right.
In the tabletop community.
I think that really kind of ties into what we're talking about when it comes to worth and value. You know, the retweet that some people can do, it's not that huge really. Like people have asked me to like retweet things and they've asked me like, how much would it cost for me to like talk about something? And generally I don't sell that stuff. That's not part of what I do. So if you see anything on my timeline, it's because I wanted to retweet it. I wanted to do something about it. But I also tell them, like, you know, getting a retweet isn't what you want out of this. You do not want that. The value of a retweet is very low. I mean, it's great. It feels nice and does expose you to a new audience, but a retweet is nowhere near the value of something else. So like talking about it, getting other people excited about it, mentioning it, doing another side-by-side stream like you were talking about, those sorts of things really have value, like actual tangible value. And, you know, kind of tying it back to what we're talking about here, when you're looking at what is my time worth, what am I worth, you have to look outside of just the product you produce. You know, as a TTRPG content creator, which I assume most people listening to this are going to be somewhere associated with, you know, just because you're looking at what you're writing, you know, the value of your writing, for example, isn't just the words. It's also your enthusiasm for the project and how much you can translate that into other things. So, I mean, NDAs are a thing. You can't talk about some projects. Yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. But you can still work around those. that's you can still say, hey, I've got this really exciting thing I can't talk about yet. I'll let you know when I can.
And then drop, which gets hype up and people are like, wait, what is it? What is it? I'm curious. Tell me more.
Exactly. And that's value. So, you know, for someone like me, because I deal a lot in social media managing, if I'm excited about something, I bring value to that project. And it's not really something that's easy to calculate monetarily. So I really, that's part of why I really keep like my likes and my retweets and stuff mine and privately mine. Yeah, I don't want anyone to be able to pay for that or buy that. It feels weird.
Yeah.
Now, sponsorships, that's a little bit different, but like organic growth is something completely not for sale. But it is value. And reflecting on that, you know, that's something that you're going to bring to any project that you're involved with. Whether it's for sale or not, it is still something that is there. So when I look at my rates and my impact and my collaboration with people on social media, if I'm doing your social media, great, fantastic. I'm good at what I do. But not only am I good at what I do, I'm also connected to a lot of people who are doing exciting things. And I'm going to talk about exciting projects. And if you're working with me, I generally don't take on boring projects. So I'm probably pretty excited about it. And that's something that I factor in. Like, okay, well, what is this going to bring to this project? What's the value of that? The larger I get and the more connected I get, the more that value increases, the more my time is worth. And that's the same with anyone. If you're doing podcasts and you're part of a podcasting network, part of your value is that podcasting network. If you are doing streaming and you've had on a number of fantastic guests that have had a great time, part of your value as a streamer are those connections.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things that's really, really important to keep in mind while you've got things going on. What am I worth? How do I figure that out? I can't give you a good, like, great number answer on that, but it should be something you think about. You know, who have I had on my show? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Well, I can draw that sort of guest. That's value. That's really important value, especially if you're looking at monetizing or if you're looking at getting sponsors. It's not just about your viewer count. It's about who's viewing you. What's your audience? What are your connections? So when you're setting out to figure out a value for yourself and a worth for your time, there's a lot of different weird things to calculate in, like connections.
Hello. Sorry for the interruption here, but I wanted to give you an advertisement for one of our friends in the tabletop community. Please give it a listen and go check them out.
Well, hello there, young adventurer. I've been waiting for you. We've met before, don't you remember? Ah, no worries. I'm quite forgetful myself. The other Sparks are waiting for you. Aviath, Shui, Theo, and Brandy. They've had such wonderful tales to tell. A truly marvelous story. I wonder which one of them will be the chosen one. Perhaps none of them will. Perhaps it will be you. The morning's coming soon. I have to leave now. Will I see you again? I sure hope so. Is a story really a story if there's no one to tell it to? Well, goodbye for now, adventurer.
Chosen Ones is a visual novel-style D&D podcast on YouTube that releases every Thursday at 1 p.m. CST. Find us on Twitter at Chosen Ones D&D. Come adventure with us.
And now, back to the show. It's interesting because, like, imposter syndrome plays a huge deal with all of us. I know that the show has been successful. I know that the show has hit 15,000 downloads, which is fantastic. I always downplay it because of the number of episodes. But the amount of people that I have met in the process has been fantastic. I met so many amazing people, have had so many beautiful conversations, played games with some fantastic role players that I would love to play with again. And when I thoroughly enjoy something, specifically like a game or a tabletop game, especially indie games, I will tell everybody about that game because I enjoyed it. So like most recently I played the current game of my hyperfixation is the Slow Knife. And the Slow Knife is a very, it's a very indie game that I didn't even know about until my partner told me about it. But it's a revenge conspiracy RPG that was on a Kickstarter made by Jack Harrison from Mousehole Press. And I played it one time and I had such a fun time playing it that I just wanted to play it again and again. I've yet to play it again, but I want to so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I have told literally dozens of people about this game just because I thought it was fun. And I'm like, you should check this game out. It doesn't cost that much. It's also just really fun, and you can play it with 2 to 4 players, and it's GM-less, $10 for a digital edition. Like, it's not expensive. Nice. Like, check it out. But then there's games that I've played that I've also had on the show that I didn't enjoy, and I don't actively talk about those games very much because, like, it just didn't click for me, or, like, it wasn't bad per se. It just wasn't, like, it didn't get me that excitement about the story from it. And when I play with particular people who I enjoyed playing with, I also have realized that I will shout those people out way more than I will shout out other people who are just like on my show one time. Because my biggest thing is the community that's being built. That's the part I enjoy the most. The friendships that I've made in the last 3 years of being a podcaster is astonishing. And And I didn't think about it until more recently when I was looking for that, now that I'm looking for a full-time job. A lot of those people, like, actually give a shit about me.
Yeah.
And have, shocking, like, right. I was like, what? Like, I've had 4 or 5 people who are willing to vouch for me to their companies to possibly get me a job there. And I'm like, but you, like, I mean, we talk a lot, but, like, do you know my work ethic? And then I realized they do know my work ethic because they've worked with me.
Yeah, they've worked with you.
And I was like, oh, yeah, you did. That's
this
weird.
This is a good point for me to interject something else. You were talking about, like, self-doubt and imposter syndrome. And, you know, knowing your worth is kind of hard sometimes. Getting an outside opinion is not a bad thing, especially in our professional field. Asking for testimonials from people you've worked with, people you've collaborated with. I mean, I've gotten some testimonials that have legit made me cry. Not even kidding. And it's really hard. It's really hard when you've got, like, 3 or 4 of those lined up and you've got imposter syndrome going. It's like, now let me go read those again real quick. And the imposter syndrome tries really, really hard. It tries really, really hard to get you to ignore those good reviews, those good testimonials. But it really only takes 1 or 2 that are really hitting on exactly what you are about, what your work means. You're going to find someone that really aligns with that. And that review, that testimonial, that comment, that will absolutely change your week. And also, on that note, if you're out there listening to this podcast, leave it a review.
I haven't had a review in so long.
Go ahead and do it right now. Just trust me, the rest of it's going to be fantastic. Just go ahead and leave that review. It really matters, especially with podcasts. Reviews are critical for growth. If you've just bought a TTRPG, any sort of content, a supplement, a little bit of art, whatever it is, wherever you bought it from, there's your reminder right now. Go leave a review. Go leave a good review. I mean, not just a good star review, but go ahead and leave more than a couple stars. Leave words. Leave great comments. Tell people what you loved. Tell people what needed work. Tell people what would make it into something you couldn't do your game without. Mm-hmm. Those are the comments that are going to change people's lives. And, you know, we're out here, we're trying to freelance. It's great. Money's cool. Yeah, money makes it possible. But what gives us the drive to keep coming back to this particular job is going to be reviews. It is going to be the positive feedback from the audience. It is going to be someone saying, oh, hey, yeah, I played your game last week. It was fantastic. I'm actually going to, like, go buy a copy for my friends and bring it to the game store. That sort of thing is what really is going to drive people. And you might think, well, why would they want to hear from me? I'm nobody. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter a single bit. Leave that comment. Leave that review.
And honestly, like, I think that the ones that hit me the hardest were when people just randomly are like, I just listened to an episode and I loved it. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you did what now? At Gen Con, I ran into a friend who I worked with. I worked with Amber, or Rocket Orca.
Oh, yeah.
And amazing person. Absolutely wonderful human being. And I walked up because I saw them and I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And they were with somebody that I didn't recognize. And then I handed a sticker to both of them because I had Beholder to No One stickers. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, I listened to your show. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what now? I'm sorry, run that by me again. Oh, what? And it was really interesting because I just kind of got blindsided by it. I'm like, you do what now? How do you know my stuff? I'm confused. But then, like, there's random people who are like, oh, one of my favorite shows is Beholder to No One. And I'm like, I'm sorry. What? Like, I just basically did the gif from Firefly, the captain. Mm-hmm. I did the gif with that where he just, like, is questioning with his hands. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, it makes your day. And then I think the ones that have had the most impact to me have been some of the GM reviews that I've gotten, especially when it's a new player at my table. I mean, it's lovely to hear from friends too. They're like, oh, yeah, I had a wonderful time. This was a great game, because after every game, imposter syndrome kicks my butt every game. I was like, I could have done this better. I could have been better here. I could have done better voices, whatever. But I remember I got a review on startplaying.games, which I have 25 reviews on now. So nice. That's cool. But one of them was a BIPOC woman who said, I felt safe at your table.
Wow. That's...
And that, like, it was more to it, but, like, that was the gist of it. Like, I felt safe at her table. She knows what she's talking about. I felt that if something was going to happen, it would be taken care of. And I did not feel scared at all.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
And I'm like, that's all I want. I want that. I want the ability to get people to play games and feel safe. And no matter what it is, if it's a podcast, if it's a stream, whatever, that's what I want people to feel. So I literally cried because I'm like, you didn't even have to post it. Like, you didn't have to do that, but you did. Right. And that makes my heart warm.
Right.
It will make somebody's shitty day into a good one if you leave a nice comment or just remind them that you still listen or you like their stuff or you enjoy their work. Mm-hmm. I still shout out every once in a while the artists who've done some of the art for my podcast stuff, mm-hmm, because I adore their work and what they did. And I'm just like, if you want some really cool art, hire this person. Like, this person's art's amazing.
Right. So yeah, all that stuff really, really matters. And I guess kind of getting into more of the esoteric aspect of worth and value. We've been talking about, like, monetary compensation and, like, what you bring to a project, like, substantially. But having a good sense of your own worth as a person is also really important. So while you're doing all the math, trying to figure out how to make your bills get paid, you know, also take into account what it's going to take for you to recharge your batteries, for you to feel fulfilled, for you to get all of that sense of self done. And don't shortchange yourself on that either. You know, a lot of people give advice about, like, setting rates and, you know, figuring out your money side of it, but also figure out what type of clients you want to work with that aren't going to make your life an absolute hell. And don't sell that. You know, don't sell your mental health unless you really have to sustain your physical health, because you're not ever going to get out of that hole if you keep doing it. So finding something that you value doing, work that you enjoy, that fulfills you, that's as important as the monetary side of it. So you can make some compromises money-wise, but you really shouldn't compromise your sense of self. You know, don't work for someone or some job that doesn't value you as a human being. If they treat you like a faceless cog, get out as soon as possible. Find somewhere else to work. Yeah. If you are working for someone that's abusive, obviously get out. If you are taking jobs that just drain your creativity time after time after time, that's not sustainable. Not just, like, not sustainable economically, it's just not humanly sustainable. You've got to find work that values you, and you've got to value your work.
Yeah.
And you got to value yourself. So I find what's really helpful for me is doing, like, a check-in, maybe, like, once a month, just sitting down and going, okay, how do I feel about these projects? How do I feel about working with these clients? How do I feel about myself being the type of person that does this work? And, you know, not all those answers come back great. You know, you're gonna come back with some answers you're not gonna like. And yeah, That's when you're gonna have to judge, okay, well, I don't like doing this work for this person, but I'd do it for $25 more. Because that $25 more would get me ice cream every week. And I do like ice cream. So finding ways to, you know, budget in, ways to recuperate that sense of worth, that sense of value. You know, that's part of the metrics too. And it does require a lot of self-reflection, a lot of introspection, and some challenging conversations, not just with your client, but also with yourself. Because
yeah,
I know a lot of us are DMs. We're used to talking to ourselves. Kind of comes with the territory. So
I'm not crazy. I'm just a DM.
That's actually another technique, though, that you can use if you're ever struggling with trying to figure out value or monetary situations. If you can create an idealized NPC version of yourself that's kind of a quest giver, you can actually use that to reflect a lot of different things. You know, role-playing is used in therapy a lot, and something I always ask people is like, well, if your friend was in your position, what would you tell them? So creating that, and creating that, oh yeah, that one's a good one, isn't it?
Yep. There's so many times that I've had discussions with friends and we literally just say, like, we'll end up saying, be nice to my friend.
Yep.
But then we do the exact same thing. And it's almost, it's irony in the worst way, but like, I started even acknowledging it. It's like, I know, for example, I feel occasionally like I'm a burden if I bombard people with issues, which is something a lot of people feel. So when I go to vent to somebody, I'm like, I'm so sorry for venting to you, even though I know I don't need, and I started saying, even though I know I don't need to apologize, like I, to just make myself aware of it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I'll talk to someone. They're like, you're never a burden. You're fine. I wouldn't talk to you. I wouldn't listen to you. I do it because if I didn't care, like I do care. But then they will do the exact same thing to me when they have a problem. Yeah. And I say the same thing that they just said, like, you are never a burden. And it's just putting yourself in their shoes for a second, but also reestablishing to yourself that logically you are not a burden. You are not insert whatever here that is a bad thing, and finding ways to reword sentences so you're less negative to yourself, which is a very fun challenge I've been teaching. I've been learning lately. And you start to realize how much you talk bad about yourself when you start actually acknowledging, oh, hey, that was a mean thought. I should. Right. Rephrase that. But there was, I had a thing to add to knowing your worth with in relation to clients and stuff like that. You don't have to take every job.
No.
Even though it's hard when you're like, I'm broke, this is money, give me money. I eventually lost a client and I was okay with it. And I was going to, I won't say who it was or anything like that, but like, I didn't have fun doing the job anymore. And they became a difficult client, in my personal opinion, with like delaying payments and making things more challenging. So I decided, like, even if they wanted me for a season two, I wouldn't take it. Mm-hmm. At first, I was going to offer it at a higher cost. But then I just realized, like, I'm not enjoying this. I'm not enjoying working 8 to 12 hours on this project every week for no recognition and being ignored for my advice and opinions, and then having to fight to get paid.
No.
I had another person who reached out, which I realized I didn't want to work with them within minutes. But they're like, oh, I'm thinking of making a podcast about the top 1%. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what now? And they repeated it. And they kept saying like, oh, it's going to be like Joe Rogan. And I'm just like, I'm sorry. I am no longer looking for clients. Too busy, because I knew for a fact editing that would be a goddamn nightmare on my mental health.
Yeah.
And I would just be mad after every episode.
Right. Well, I mean, at that point, it's not that you were necessarily turning down that client. It was you are allowing yourself to say yes to two good clients later that you wouldn't be able to say yes to if you were taking that job.
That is a different way to look at it, yes.
Because that's something I look at. Like, if I'm turning down a client, what am I going to gain for this? Looking at like the negative clients, the ones that are going to be massive drains, you know, I might do say 2 hours worth of work on social media a week for a client, right? But sometimes some of the stuff that I'm doing is just so draining that for the next hour after I do that work, I'm not doing anything because it's just, okay, that was terrible. And I have to charge for that time because that's time that they're utilizing. So that type of work, I do have premium rates for some stuff. It's all up front. Everyone knows what they're paying for. But, you know, sometimes it's like, I can't take on more of that sort of work because I'm not going to be able to say yes to another client afterwards. Mm-hmm. And like, there is definitely a mental cost to what we do. So being aware of that's really good. Circling back real quick on what you said about being nice to yourself, because like I said, wellness instructor, this is what I do. I got to touch on it.
That's fine.
Something that I've used to help people that struggle with asking for help or asking for advice or, you know, feeling like they're a burden is, okay, when your friend comes to you with a problem and they open up and they're vulnerable and they feel safe around you and you've got something you can do to help them, whether it's just lend an ear or whether it's to give them a practical, solid solution, how does that feel to you?
Good.
Feels pretty damn good, right? Yeah. Why don't you give your friends that opportunity? Why are you taking that joy away from your friends? It's not cool.
Damn logic.
It's a convoluted one, but it is one of those that most people sit there and they go, I had never thought about the fact that asking my friends for help makes them feel valued and important and powerful. Huh.
Yep. Yeah, that made me think.
Mm-hmm.
I recently went to visit my partner and I had a couple of breakdowns while I was there because mm-hmm. I felt safe, because I felt
right
in a place that I could. And at no point did I ever feel judged in the entire time. And then whenever he needs something, I'm like, what do you need? He's like, your presence is more than enough. Like, that is fine. And I'm like, okay, then I'm here. If you want more, then let me know.
Right.
So I started to accept that a little bit. It's a very hard thing to accept. And it kind of goes also with just help in general, like asking mm-hmm. for help with Beholder to No One, for example, was one of the hardest things I had to do because I had to give up mm-hmm. some type of control.
Right.
And for a workaholic control freak, it's a bit of a challenge. And then also, like, I think another thing to learn is just because you've been burnt before doesn't mean you're going to have it happen with every person, which is a very hard lesson.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the hesitancies I personally have with asking for help with things, is like getting burnt again, getting that same response I've gotten in the past mm-hmm. and being disappointed. And like, my brain is like, but what if they just do the same thing? It's like, but what if they don't? So I'm not saying don't have contracts and stuff like that. Definitely have contracts while you work with people, but go into it giving them a fair chance that they are interested and willing to help you. And then don't take it personally if they don't want to eventually, because it's probably not about you. It's hopefully not about you. It's more than likely like, I just don't have time anymore. I'm really sorry. Like with me stepping, I'm going to be stepping away from Weave. It's not about Weave. It's about me being burnt the fuck out and needing time to focus on things that I am passionate about because those have taken a wayside while I was working on Weave stuff, which is fine. But like, I don't want that to happen. I want this other project to work. And I have ideas for new things that I want to try that I don't have time to do because I'm just so drained and have been in a perpetual state of burnout since like July and never gave myself really the time to recover. Which also, knowing your worth is taking a vacation. Take it from someone who hasn't taken vacations very much. Take them. Take days off.
You're going to be more productive long term. You absolutely will. You're going to put out higher quality work. You're going to be able to do the work longer. You're going to be able to appreciate it more. You're going to be worth more if you take vacations. Just because your time is more scarce. Charge more for it.
That is also fair.
Didn't think about that, did you?
No, I literally took one day off every 2 months for the last year and a half. The only time I took more than a day off was because I had a breakdown for 2 days.
I wonder why. Couldn't be overwork, could it?
Nope, no, not that. Not at all. And then once I did take 2.5 days mm-hmm. for a trip with my now ex-girlfriend, but like with my girlfriend at the time. But literally at the time of recording this, less than a week ago, I took 5 days off, 5 whole days off with zero work, and it was phenomenal. And I didn't think about work at all. I didn't record. I recorded one thing. I didn't record anything else. And that one thing was with the person I was visiting. And I didn't feel guilty, which was the weirdest thing for me. It's like, why do I not feel guilty for not working?
Yeah, I was going to ask what changed.
I think it was because I was happy in where I was visiting and not just like sitting around doing nothing.
That's fair.
Where if I take a day off here and I'm not busy, I'm just thinking about all the things I could be doing. It's like, well, I wasted the day playing video games instead of like, well, I went out and visited people and I went out and hung out with people. I went out to a pool party and celebrated someone's birthday and then went out to lunch and filled the day with things and activities. It feels like you've actually done something. I think the difference is like, if I'm going to do an at-home thing, I think the difference that I need to add is like doing something I'm passionate about. Like paint a painting, read a book, play my instrument, do something, even if it's like just for an hour, So you at least feel accomplished still, instead of just like, I didn't work at all. Or work on something that it's for you.
Right.
So like a writing
project.
Yeah, a novel or something that you haven't finished in 6 years.
As is tradition.
I have 3 unfinished novels with 5 or 6 rewrites.
There you go.
I don't even know where we're at in any of them anymore.
At least you're practiced in writing them.
I'm very practiced, not at finishing, but at writing, yes.
Hey, that's better than most people do.
It's fair. I also think it's important to like learn new skills while you're doing things. Mm-hmm. It's not really a break, so count it as work, but like, I find it fascinating to, it technically improves my value.
Yeah.
But I find it fascinating to learn new things that I see somebody else do it. I'm like, ooh, how did they do that? I want to know how to do that. Can I teach myself how to do that? I can't. Let's do that.
Yeah. When you find learning fun, it gives you an outlet. It gives you something to do. And also it does improve your life, improve your value. So yeah, being passionate about learning, probably one of the biggest things to try and cultivate in yourself. A lot of people hate to learn. A lot of people hate like practicing things because a lot of it involves being really bad at things. So that's never any fun. I don't know anyone that really enjoys being bad at things.
Yeah.
But the development into actual skill can be really, really nice, seeing those incremental changes.
It's funny when you like put all the things down that you know how to do and you start realizing, holy shit, I've done a lot.
Oh yeah. I'm writing a resume for myself and like going over the last year and a half, I'm just like,
yeah,
this doesn't seem reasonable to have learned in a year and a half. Like it's I've developed more skills freelancing in the last year and a half than I did in 5 years of actual work. No doubt.
Yes, 100%. I've taught myself so much in 3 years of podcasting, mm-hmm. not only just like how to promote myself, but I've taught myself how to edit. And then I got paid for editing other people's mm-hmm. stuff. And then I taught myself how to make GIFs and video stuff. And I taught myself how to market myself, which was the hardest one, I think, to learn. But like I did that even when I was working a corporate job. I was the person that people would go to mm-hmm. learn things. It's like, oh, we need this fix. It's VBA and Excel. We need these fancy advanced Excel formulas. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't want to do that, but I'll give me 2 hours in Google and I'll figure it out.
Right.
And then I'd figure it out. And they were like, oh, cool. You figured it out. I was like, yeah, somehow. There you go.
I hope it doesn't break later because I don't know how to fix it.
Pretty much.
But give me 2 hours in Google and I'll figure out how to fix it.
Yeah. I figured out how to do VBA which is Visual Basics for Excel for their macros, because someone's like, hey, we have this macro, but it's broken and we need to make some changes. Can you fix it? And I'm like, maybe give me a couple hours and some Google and I'll figure it out. YouTube tutorials and stuff. But I did that forever because of my ADHD with crafting. I wanted to try a new craft. So I did. And then I successfully did the thing. I was like, cool, I did the thing. And then I never touched it again because I completed the thing.
Yep.
But I know how to do the thing, whatever that is. So it was really funny when I was first told I was the guru of Excel, when like 4 years prior, I knew jack shit about Excel. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what do you mean I'm the guru? What? How did that happen? And they're like, well, you're just really good at Excel. Like, you know how to do everything in Excel. I'm like, Google knows how to do everything in Excel. I just figure it out. But technically, that's me knowing things about Excel because I know how to figure it out. And I was like, yeah, well, okay. So keep learning. Get certifications and do the thing. Challenge yourself.
Love what you do.
Yes, definitely. Definitely that.
And also get paid what you're worth. The time that you put into it, the time that you put around the thing, the time it takes you to recover from the thing, those are all billable. Like, they really are. If you have a job that you only work 10 hours for, but it leaves you absolutely stressed out for the rest of the week, 30 hours, charge for those hours because you can't work, but you're still in work mode. That's time you need to get paid for.
That's 100%. Yep, agreed. Okay, well, on that note, I think we've all learned a lot today and have some thinking to do about a lot of things. Tell everybody where they can find you on the internet.
Yeah, like I said at the start, I am Soul. You can find me everywhere as Souls Rolls. That's SOLSROLES, as in possessive roles, multiple things that I do. I've got a website, soulsrolls.com, Twitter, Souls Rolls, Twitch, Souls Rolls, YouTube, Souls Rolls, Instagram, it's Souls Rolls. It's just Souls Rolls everywhere. Gmail, you want to mail me? soulsrolls@gmail.com. I haven't changed my phone number to Souls Rolls. Might have to look into that. But yeah, I'm open to any questions. I'm always happy to help people. Like I tell people, tips and advice, it's always free. Never expect like me to charge you for a little bit of help. If you need more, if you need something like social media done, you know, contact me. Happy to work with people on that, especially smaller TTRPG creators or larger, bigger brands. Always happy to do that. If you need health and wellness advice, coaching, by all means, reach out. If you can't afford it and you're in a kind of a crisis situation, I do have a couple of hours free generally each week that I do donate, because I feel like health should be available. It shouldn't be something that's locked behind a paywall. So, yep, it's me there.
Awesome. So thank you for being on the show. It was wonderful chatting with you, just like it was the last time we chatted that wasn't recorded. You can find me at Beholder to No One on Twitter and Twitch and Instagram and Tumblr now. Hey. Or Nikki Beholder to No One on Twitch, though I'm usually on other people's shows. This week, tonight, this is the 21st when this episode's going out, I will be on Weave the Tale at 8 p.m. Eastern, so go check out our finale episode of Chronicles of Pine Pass. I am running a D&D 5e game, so go check that out tonight. Tomorrow, I will be on Big Gay Dice Games over on 2000 Tales Roleplaying on YouTube, where I will be playing Masks with my wonderful, very stuck-up, very self-centered star, a superhero. So go watch that at 8:30. Nothing else this week because Thanksgiving. So if you celebrate Thanksgiving in the U.S., happy Thanksgiving. I hope you enjoy your time with your family. If you don't celebrate, I hope you just have a wonderful weekend. And if you share with me in the comments, wherever comments may be, Twitter or Instagram or on this post in Podbean, share with us what is something that you've learned about your self-worth or how you help yourself with that, because I'm curious to know how y'all do nice things for yourselves. Do the nice things. But that is all we have for today, so thank you so much. Keep being awesome. We'll see you next time. Bye. Hey, before you go, I just wanted to let you know that this episode was edited by Matt over at Walsh Animation. They are part of the Table Party podcast, and I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to them, especially because Matt has been such a freaking lifesaver when it comes to editing the discussion episodes recently. So please listen to this ad for Table Party podcast and go check them out and make sure you give them some love. Thanks.
What makes Table Party different from other tabletop podcasts?
The music.
The setting.
The characters.
The gore.
A bunch of different games.
The refreshing coldness of ice cream.
The 300-foot-tall squid named Delilah.
The dice rolls.
The horrifying body horror.
The aroma.
The suffering of my players.
Dairy Queen blizzards.
The luxurious plush texture.
The free coupons.
Bad decisions.
And who can we expect?
I'm Kelsey.
I'm Matt.
I'm Gabe.
I'm Walsh.
I'm Chris.
Welcome to the table party.
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 Welcome to the table party.